From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Brentwood.
Corte Madera.
Pleasant Hill.
Inner Richmond in San Francisco.
Montclair in Oakland.
Tiburon. Sausalito.
Japantown, San Francisco.
Berkeley, California.
Coming up, we'll hear from the man who came up with the idea to light up the Bay Bridge.
It costs more to park under the bridge than it does to light it. It's the most cost-effective installation I've ever heard of from an energy perspective in terms of its ability to reach so many people.
Then we'll illuminate a local theater company offering up some global insight.
That makes the Middle East accessible. It makes you not be afraid of it.
The Middle East center stage. And we'll head up to Napa Valley to see how the harvest happens.
Their hands are all shadowed with the color. You know, we call it the Purple Pride.
That and more today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. San Francisco is globally famous for being home to the iconic Golden Gate Bridge, but tonight it's the Bay Bridge that's making headlines worldwide. At 8:30 tonight, a new public art installation called The Bay Lights launches with 25,000 LEDs lighting up all the cables across the western span of the bridge. Images of cars, boats, fish, and changing designs, they'll be part of the Bay Area landscape for the next 2 years. Sculptor Leo Villarreal is the project's light artist, but the man who came up with the idea is Ben Davis from the organization Illuminate the Art, who I talked to earlier today.
The idea came in September of 2010. I was sitting at the Ferry Building in San Francisco looking at the west span of the Bay Bridge, thinking what a gorgeous piece of infrastructure it was, and knowing that its 75th anniversary was coming up, thinking of ways to let it shine in the region's consciousness again. And it hit me, it didn't need to just be a bridge, it could be a canvas for light.
A canvas for light. And what had been your background?
Well, I actually was familiar in thinking about the Bay Bridge because my company, Words, Pictures, Ideas, had been communicating on the Bay Bridge. And so I had a professional interest in it, but I also have, like many Bay Area people, a real sense of connection to the bridge and a sense of its importance in our lives. And also sort of, I don't know, an empathy for it. You know, when it came online in 1936, it really represented the best of America, bringing us through a time of depression. And the first bridge in the bridgeification of our region. It was an engineering marvel. You know, the West Bend is actually two bridges connected by that central anchorage. And then 6 months later, the Golden Gate Bridge opened up. And, the world fell in love with that bridge, as they should. It's gorgeous. But the Bay Bridge fell into a different place in stature, and I wanted to just have a moment of it returning to sort of luster.
There's been lots of discussion about, you know, will the Bay Bridge outshine the Golden Gate and, you know, illuminating San Francisco's other bridge. So was that all part of your goal, kind of to bring attention to this less famous bridge?
Well, yes, I suppose. I mean, I love the Golden Gate Bridge. I bicycle across it, and every time I do, I have one of those amazing experiences that one can have on such a perfect, beautiful structure. But I really appreciate the Bay Bridge. You know, it's actually multiple bridges. It's got towers, it's got trestles, it's got anchorages, it's got tunnels. It's a hermaphrodite of a bridge. Maybe that's why it represents the Bay Area in its truest nature. It's complex.
So you had this idea, and you took it to New York artist sculpture artist Leo Villarreal. So what was that partnership like when it was launched?
Oh, it's just amazing. From the very, very beginning, Leo is just the real deal. An artist of international renown who's got great depth. You know, he has an MFA from Yale. He hangs in the halls of MoMA in New York and major collections around the world. But he has roots in the Bay Area. And he really finds his voice, his artistic voice, on the playa of Burning Man. So, you know, the connection was immediate, and Leo's vision, which really emanated 3 months after our discussions began in the form of a 60-second artist rendering video, it was the game changer. You know, it exceeded anything I had envisioned by far, and it had people, instead of them asking me, what is it, they said, how can I make this happen?
And what did you envision, and what will people see tonight?
Well, what people will see tonight is a work of extraordinary contemporary art that happens to live on a bridge. It's really different than anything that has come before. You know, we see the Eiffel Tower, an illuminated icon. We see the bridge over the Bosphorus in Istanbul. Again, these are lighted structures. This is not that. This is a work of contemporary art, 25,000 individually controllable LEDs in the hands of the artist Leo Burial. And his sublime algorithms will turn on tonight, and they'll be non-repeating over the course of the next 2 years, coming on at dusk every night and lasting until 2 a.m.
I wanted to kind of bring to your attention some of the some of the criticisms that have come up. What do you say to people who talk of light pollution, for example, or bring up the idea that, you know, too much light for 2 years? The Bay Bridge is already well lit. You've probably heard those kind of things. And what do you say?
Well, you know, we haven't really heard a lot of those criticisms, although we respect all points of view. You know, a $100,000 environmental impact study was done on this work before we ever took any first steps in making it happen. We made sure it was safe for drivers, safe for wildlife, safe for the environment, and not a distraction. I think the overwhelming international response bears out the importance of this work. It bears out the relationship of this light to the city, which is not at all overpowering. It lives in a way that can be seen and read, but it doesn't take over. And it really brings us together as a community and as a world rather than creates any sense of division.
San Francisco is definitely in the news a lot these days because of the Bay Lights project. So here's something. What happens to the 25,000 lights when the 2 years are up?
Oh, I think that's a fun question to ask. I mean, we've probably asked that in about a year. I think they'll have a really creative afterlife is my sense, but I don't want to project what that might be right now.
All right. And is there an environmental message that you're sending through this, you know, their LED lights? Was that on your mind at all, or is this just art?
Absolutely. You know, this is the era we live in. Here's the reality. For about $30 a night, we're delivering an experience that is going to reach, over the course of 2 years, 50 million people directly and a billion online. It costs more to park under the bridge than it does to light it. It's the most cost-effective installation I'd ever heard of from an energy perspective in terms of its ability to reach so many people. It's also happening in an extraordinary time in Bay Area history. You know, this year alone, the America's Cup will be giving the San Francisco Bay. The new $300 million exploratorium cultural facility will be opening on Pier 15. The Port of San Francisco celebrates its 150th anniversary. The Baseball World Series Classic visits AT&T Park. And the new Bay Bridge opens over Labor Day weekend, introducing a new icon into our community. It is an extraordinary time, and it's a delight that while the Bay Area has the best it has to offer every single day, practically every night, the Bay Lights will be providing a cosmopolitan shimmer to everything we do.
That's Ben Davis from the organization Illuminate the Arts, who came up with the concept to light the Bay Bridge. The Bay Lights turn on tonight at 8:30. If you go out to see it, snap a photo and share it with us on Facebook or Twitter at KALW. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Well, speaking of lights in the darkness, one arts company has for years been enlightening, entertaining, and engaging the San Francisco public through another form of artistic expression, live theater. The purpose of Golden Thread Theater Company is to bring Middle Eastern literature, folklore, and current events center stage. Plays tackle issues as serious as terrorism and the Patriot Act, and as light as folk tales featuring animals and wise fools. Iranian-American writer and playwright Turanj Yeghi Azarian founded Golden Thread in 1996. I asked her what inspired her to start the company.
So I chose to direct a production. It was an adaptation of a Greek comedy, an ancient Greek comedy, Lysistrata, where women go on a sex strike to force men to sign a peace treaty. And in my adaptation, it was Palestinians and Israelis with the Iranians in the background playing around that came together to sign a peace treaty. So, and I wanted the name of a theater company on the production. So I created, I was reading a lot of Greek myths and Greek stories. I came across the myth of Ariadne, where she gives a golden thread to Theseus so that he can find his way back through the labyrinth. And it resonated with me because I tend to get lost all the time. And for me, theater, in a way, is a way to find my way through life.
So let's talk about these plays that you've been presenting to audiences here in San Francisco. Give me some examples of those kind of plays that really you think maybe possibly changed their minds about either the Near East or South or Asia or the Middle East or people from there.
Well, I think plays by Yusuf El-Gindi, for example, since 9/11, he began writing plays specifically that deal with the aftermath of the Patriot Act and the loss of privacy and the sort of ethnic profiling that happened. So a play like Back of the Throat, where an Arab-American writer is targeted by government agents, and kind of very simple elements, decorative elements in his apartment are perceived as evidence of him being, you know, a Muslim fundamentalist or Islamic fundamentalist. So, and the really tragic outcome that has for this, you know, young man. Similarly,
Language Rooms.
Language Rooms is, again, a similar character, a young Arab-American man who is actually working for Homeland Security as a so-called translator. And it's interesting, these, you know, the job of a translator, in fact, is to interrogate. And to successfully interrogate, it may require torture. And so that's all part of the job of the translator. And when this young man comes face to face with his own father as someone who's brought in for questioning, that really brings up a variety of questions and issues about, you know, immigration, the hopes, his father's hopes for him, and then where he is ultimately end up. And so, and that is an extremely powerful play that, you know, it really questions what being an American is in many ways.
Okay, so let's talk about What Do the Women Say?
Yay.
Who came up with this idea, and what is it?
The idea really is to highlight Middle Eastern women, and that is a response to the very negative perceptions that dominate popular media about Middle Eastern women, about their ability to express themselves, about their experience. Yes, there are, I was having this conversation with somebody the other day, that yes, it's true that there are Middle Eastern women who are oppressed. That is a fact. But A, that's not unique to the Middle East. And B, there are many who are courageous, who are active, who are leading their communities. And they need to be, they need to be highlighted. Their efforts need to be highlighted.
Okay, so your company now has really grown, and you have branched out of doing just theater to spoken word performances. You have educational programs for children throughout the Bay Area. What do those do that a play doesn't do? Or what is your larger mission?
So our education program came out of community demands, really, because as friends and audience members were having children, they kept asking us for family programming. They kept asking us for children classes, theater classes for their children, for performances for their children. And they value theater as a way to connect their kids to their heritage.
Can you give me an example of one of the little stories told, for example, to the children?
Well, right now we just wrapped up the tour of Nasreddin's magnificent journey to Samarkand. Nasreddin is a comic character, a wise fool, well known in Turkey, Iran, Central Asia. And also in the Arab world, he's known as Hoja or Nasreddin Hoja. In Iran, we call him Mullah Nasreddin.
In Sudan, we call him Joha.
Yes.
We switch it around.
Yes, it's the same. It's the same character. And so we've, as you know, there are many, many fables and stories and sayings that Nasreddin has. So we've compiled a bunch of these and created a 30-minute performance. And what's fun about Nasreddin's story is that, you know, it brings, so we have a scene where he goes to Damascus and he goes to a caravanserai and there's a goat and there's, you know, they're just like things that you might stereotypically associate with the Middle East. At the same time, you know, he has this, his favorite donkey that they travel together. And then when the donkey so-called dies, he goes to a donkey mechanic shop. And just like a car mechanic, the donkey gets repaired and fixed up. And that was a scene that was improvised by the actors. And the kids love it.
And so, what does that do?
Well, that makes the Middle East accessible. And it makes you like it. It makes you not be afraid of it. And if you're from the Middle East and you're a five-year-old, it makes you proud to be of that region, right? So it's huge. It's huge.
That's Turanj Yegi Azarian, founder and artistic director at Golden Thread Theater Company. They're presenting What Do the Women Say?, a live performance celebrating International Women's Day this Friday night at La Peña Cultural Center in Berkeley. Details are at kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. So, we've got plans to see the Bay Bridge light up. We'll see a play at Golden Thread. But many would say a San Francisco night on the town wouldn't be complete without a glass of wine. Napa County has been home to winemaking since before California was part of the United States. Millions of people visit every year, flocking to wineries to taste the latest and buy special vintages. Right now, it's pruning season, when field workers spend weeks cutting back the vines so they'll produce the best grapes for the fall harvest. Well, we're going to head back now to the last fall harvest. KALW's Julie Kane went there to see what she could hear as part of Audiograph, our project documenting the Bay Area's signature sounds and the stories behind them.
Tourists who visit Napa might imagine seeing people with bare feet squishing grapes between their toes. That's part of harvest. But there's another part that happens not with the toes, but with fingers and tractors. Not in daylight, but under floodlights that burn through the night. It's 10 p.m. at a gas station near St. Helena. Even though the entire valley is filled with activity, this gas station is the only thing open for miles.
Whopping 727.
Ooh. We're at the Fires gas station here. It's the St. Helena Highway. It's also the Highway 29, and it's also Main Street St. Helena. This is where I tell people dogs are traded and dates are made.
So where are you going tonight?
I'm at work.
Are they crushing tonight?
No, we're done.
Tonight is the last night of the 2012 grape harvest. The work's been going nonstop, 24 hours a day, for weeks.
Workers come from out of the county. They come all the way from Modesto, Lodi. They get picked up in the early morning. They start at 3 o'clock and 4 o'clock in the morning. They're not done until 6, 7. They work around the clock this time of year. But in the middle of the night, you know, it's crazy because they have the vineyards all lit up and you can hear them just through the grapes, you know, you can hear them. And their hands are all shadowed with the color, you know, we call it the purple pride. You can be proud when your hands are stained that color, you know, knowing that you treated, you know, that you were in touch.
All right, so you're on duty.
Yep.
The gas station is surrounded by the harvest. Field workers and tractors move through the fields right across the highway, and big trucks rumble past, hauling freshly picked grapes to be processed first thing in the morning. About 10 miles from the gas station is the Paradux Vineyard. It's owned by a company called Duckhorn. In a field outside the winery, six men in orange safety vests and heavy work boots are doing squats, stretching out their muscles before a long night of grueling physical labor. These guys are getting ready to work hard. They're trying to pick the last grapes of the season before a storm comes. The skies are clear right now, but heavy rain is in the forecast.
Mi nombre es Fermín Hurtado, de México, de Michoacán.
Fermín Hurtado is the foreman tonight.
I worked for Duckhorn for about 20 years.
He's paying attention to everything, watching the sky for rain and making sure the work goes as planned. The harvest, or la cosecha, is his very favorite part of the job. He says that's because this is when they get to see the fruits of all the work they've done the whole year. Tonight, he's excited, but he's also worried. If the fields get too wet, the tractors that haul the grapes to the winery will get stuck in the mud between the vines, and the harvest will come to a stop. He says the rain's coming at 3 or 4 in the morning, but we'll see. Jorge Flores is sharpening a small curved knife that he'll use to cut Cabernet grapes by hand until sunrise, or until it starts raining. He's been cutting grapes for 5 years. He slices them from the vines by hand and then drops them into a gray plastic bin with the number 3 stenciled on the side. They get paid by the bin, or bandeja.
¿Cómo se llama?
Bandeja.
Bandeja.
Each one holds about 40 pounds of grapes. The faster you pick, the more bins you fill, and the more money you make. But even though speed is important,
el cuchillo es algo peligroso. Si no tiene uno cuidado, se puede cortar.
The knives can be dangerous if you're not careful, and your attention is divided, watching the blade and inspecting the fruit while you cut. Not all the grapes are high enough quality for the vineyard to use.
Esta no la quieren, esta no es calidad. Esta es la fruta buena que la que quiere la, la compañía.
Out in the field, the men move quickly, hunched over at the waist, pushing aside leaves to get at the ripe fruit and kicking their bins along the ground as they move from vine to vine. As soon as they're full, the men hoist them under their shoulders and run as fast as they can to a waiting tractor, where they toss their grapes into a crate the size of a pickup truck bed. Then they shout their number stenciled on the side of their bin to the foreman, and he jots it down on a clipboard. This is how they'll get paid. The work is fast and relentless and physically demanding. That's why the stretches and squats are so important before they start. Being in good shape is the only way to make a living at this. But even so, the work eventually takes a toll.
Al principio entramos con ganas, ya después de medianoche ya se cansa el cuerpo ya.
We start out with a lot of energy, Jorge says, but after midnight, our bodies start to get tired. But just because the body gets tired doesn't mean the work is done. These men will keep picking tonight until the very last grape is stripped from these vines, or until it starts raining.
Ayúdenme a Chava, para que no se vayan a quedar.
That piece was produced by Julie Kane. Audiograph wants to know where you think we should record. Leave your suggestions on our feedback line, 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106.
The wine was delicious.
Secret, Peter.
Naturally, I'll say it's the wine.
Mmm, it does go well with a chicken.
Delicious again, Peter.
This is Cross Currents. Napa is a place that's special to many. The Bay Area is filled with such places. We've been asking our staff to go out and bring back profiles of somewhere they'd never been to. KALW's Anna Sterling brings us this place profile.
I decided to do my place profile on the Armenian Community Center. I used to live in the Sunset, so I passed by it all the time. And I noticed that they had bingo night.
Years and years ago, they used to have normal bingo towards like a, just a straight line. Now, you have to like make these certain kind of pictures on certain games, such as a crazy kite. You have to make a biscuit and a lion going through, makes it like a kite. Sometimes you have to get like nine. Sometimes you have to get a nine pack, which is nine in a row. It's a lot more entertaining than just a normal bingo. So my daughter plays here and she's won six times in one night. Yeah. She's right there.
G53. My name is Crystal Gilbert. I go with my grandma and my dad, so it's always a good time. I spend a lot of money here. I'm definitely addicted. I won six times in one night and it came to like $2,300. I walked away, my dad and I like split it, and we walked away as happy as can be. I went shopping the next day. I paid all my bills, and it was a great day.
Those were Martin and Crystal Gilbert. They spoke with KALW's Anna Sterling. So what place is special to you? Tell us what it is and why it's special on our Facebook page. We are KALW. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Oftentimes, the places we hold dear are from our past, our childhoods. And that brings us to your stories. This is StoryCorps Griot. Growing up on a plantation in Canton, Mississippi in the 1920s, Lillian Edwards' parents sheltered her from racism. They made it a point to avoid the white areas in town, so Lillian would grow up unaware of the realities of racial segregation. The plan worked, that is, until she grew up and moved to Chicago. At 87 years old, Edwards shared with her friend Liz Nichols her very first encounter with segregation in 1945 in this piece from our archives.
In Chicago, you couldn't live where you wanted to. You had to live like if they call in the black area. I didn't understand that. I thought that you could live anywhere, because I'm just beginning to learn what my parents didn't teach me about segregation.
And how did you find that out? I mean, did you try to go places and they said no, or did other people tell you? Or?
My cousin and I had gone out looking for a job. And we came by this store, and we was hot. It was really hot. So I said, let's go in and get a pop. So he said, okay. So we asked the man to open the pop, and he did. And me and him were standing there, and he said, you can't drink that pop in here. Why? I just bought it in here. Well, you're not supposed to drink that pop in here. You can't. I said, the pop on the counter, give my money. Give me my money. If I can't drink this pop in here, he said, you can walk the streets. I said, I didn't walk the streets and buy it. So that's why my parents were so scared when I left home. I'm just so mouthy. You know, I wanted to know. Yeah. I said, if I can't drink this pop in here, give me my money. So he gave us our money back, and we just left the pop in. And so when we got out, I don't understand. I said to my cousin, which he knew, and I said to him, I say, why we couldn't drink that pop in the store? He said, look at your hand. Nothing wrong with my hand. He said, it's black, ain't it? That's segregation. I said, well, what is that? I had never heard it. I said, well, what is segregation? I was with my cousin on the streets when he started explaining to me about segregation.
You can interview your friends and family at the San Francisco StoryCorps booth. We'll show you how at KELW.org. That's also where you can hear all our stories from StoryCorps. That's all for today's edition of Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Julie Kane, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hoff, Alyssa Kapnick, Christina Loring, Erica Moo, Liz Pfeffer, Mary Reese, Stephen Short, and RJ Sloan. Today's show is engineered by Seth Samuel and Eva Sonsin. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Thanks to City Car Share, which provides an alternative transportation option for our reporters. They're online at citycarshare.org. And thank you. We are listener-supported radio. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We'll go out onto restricted waters to uncover where some of the largest residents of Sassoon Bay are disappearing and just what they'll be leaving in their wake.
This paint was just sloughing off into San Francisco Bay in massive quantities. Lead, cadmium, zinc, chromium.
That's tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents from KALW News. You're listening to the Bay Area band Hot Einstein. They're playing at Disco Volante in Oakland on March 23rd. Hot Einstein plays there the third Saturday of every month. Music starts at 9 p.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba. We stayed up late and it's okay because I'm in the band. I'm in the band. We play to the night. Hit the beat again, another song. It makes me feel alive. I'm in the band. And I'm feeling all right. Hit the road again, another town. That's my kind of life. The next time we rode on, down from Syracuse to Rome. We played until the sun came up. Won't sleep till I get home. Richmond will get married. We'll go play out on the slate. On Cross Currents from KALW News, we're not shy about taking on the big stories.
I can't imagine a cow working out in the city. They're just too big.
Well, maybe not that big.
But I think probably you could do sheep.
Oh, most definitely. We go digging for stories wherever we can find them. Some pop up in the tiniest of places.
We are still less than a speck on a mote on the skin of an elephant.
Or in the furthest recesses of the Bay Area, like the Santa Cruz Mountains.
That's actually not a lion on a hunting rampage. It's a female looking for love.
In all the wrong places?
I am like a rabbit. I am replete with ideas, and I am just hopping around, ready to do it.
So are we on Cross Currents. Take a walk on the wilder side with us, weekdays at 5 on KALW 91.7. Just keep on stuck. Just keep on stuck.